top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Turn.
Honey, there ain't no turns off this highway.
What was it, Lance? What did you see back there?
I saw the light, honey. I saw the light.
You've met my brothers and my sister, Mr. Bogan. I don't believe we've ever met. My name is Myron Stackpool. I'm the, pardon the expression, the head of the family. We Stackpools all have our peculiarities.
You made them folks downstairs go away. I want you to do the same thing for Howard Oates. You make him go away.
And you aren't at all concerned about my subjects down in the basement?
Letting you do what you do, just letting you stay around and keeping my mouth shut, that's a price to me. Man takes a risk, why he ought to get paid for it, seems reasonable to me.
You press too hard and you make it worth it for me to employ desperate measures. I'm not normally a vindictive person, but in your case, I'm going to make an exception.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here is episode 391 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Head of the Family. A cheeky double entendre there, and this is a movie that's smarter than it appears. I mean, as well it should be. It's a Full Moon Features, a Charles Band-directed production. I think Band did the music too, if I'm not mistaken, but the thrust and what the movie's really leaning into is one of my favorite ideas and concepts in the entire horror pantheon, which is essentially the disembodied head or the separated out brain. One of my favorite examples of this is The Brain, a late 80s Canadian sci-fi horror, very, very low budget. David Gale, the UK actor from Reanimator, another great disembodied head movie, you know, he plays this evil scientist who's in this lab and sending out telepathic messages to try and brainwash the populace. And he's got electrodes hooked up to this pulsating bit of gray matter. It's such a good movie. Like Canadian horror, just so many examples of underseen gems, whether it's that or Pin. And yes, Reanimator, the classic all-time line, who's going to believe a talking head? And there's an infamous scene with Barbara Crampton and a severed disembodied head that's just amazing. It's just, but it runs the gamut. All types of films, your Beetlejuice, Return of the Living Dead, there's Total Recall, an exploding disembodied head, The Brain That Wouldn't Die, they saved Hitler's brain. It really is a throwback to the Mary Shelley Frankenstein idea of tinkering with something that you shouldn't, and that's really the thrust of Head of the Family. You have this patriarch of this essentially mutant family, you know, they call the Stackwells, and the patriarch is Myron, and he's a very Dr. Evil-esque figure. He motors around in a wheelchair and has this giant almost potato noggin, and you could see that whoever is playing this character, it's a combination of like latex animatronics and practical effects, but you can see there that they're get a sense that they're behind him, and the limbs are operating on either side. It's almost like that improv comedy game where you have one person put their hand in their pockets and then you have someone else behind them manipulating the hands, and then you give them a topic and they have to do something with it. It's super fun. It's super ridiculous. And this one is set in the deep south of which Florida, at least the northern part of the state, is a part, known for kind of a white trash sensibilities. It's something Charles Band explores in a lot of his movies. He's really an interesting character, and I'm working my way through Confessions of a Puppet Master, his memoir, and it's really interesting to hear how he grew up. Obviously, his father is Albert, and he grew up basically in the film business, and in a large part in Europe, particularly in Rome, I believe, while his dad was filming all these productions, and he cut his teeth on these kinds of movies. And he really is a champion of the home video movie, and this is like the quintessential movie of that type. And it's just, you know, a Charles Band Full Moon feature production when you see it. I mean, the guy, I think, produced hundreds of movies. He was just an indefatigable workhorse, like Vincent Price almost, like just constant work. And probably best known for Puppet Master, of course, but Castle Freak is super fun as well. And you have these very low-budget, contained movies, but they have a certain slickness, so they may be cheap, but they don't look super cheap, and I think therein lies some of his appeal, because sometimes some of the trauma films really wear the badge and wear the low-budget DIY aesthetic a little too much on their sleeve. So but when you get a Full Moon feature production, you really, like, it has a certain and this is can be in large part to ascribed to Charles Band, who's quite a talented filmmaker in his own right too. And I think he's been at the helm for probably 50 or 60 movies, and this one, there's this family, and they all have superpowers, almost like a Marvel comic book movie. Like one character has superhuman ability to entice men, and almost like a siren from Greek mythology. Her wiles and whims can't be denied. It's such a funny idea. It's so utterly stupid. I forget the actress's name, but yes, a sexy woman, and all the men just immediately fall head over heels for her. And then there's this, the muscle of the family, and there are mutants. They're quadruplets, actually, although they don't look alike, but they each have this kind of ability, again, like superhero movie, the Marvel Universe almost. The one guy has superhuman strength, and his name is Otis, and that's pretty funny too. And we're going to step on a little bit, trot upon a little of what we learned, because this is a little bit of a different podcast. I got to get to work, so I just wanted to whip off something really quick and cheap and cheerful here, as befitting a Charles Band production. But Otis, like in the horror space, my God, I just saw the Larry Fessenden film Wendigo, which I really quite liked. I like a lot of his movies, actually, and that that one set in the woods, I believe it upstate New York, and that supervillain, Otis, there you go. And one of the best, I think, verisimilitude, chock-a-block realism horror films is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, and his partner in crime, Henry's, of course, is literally partner in crime is Otis. So you have that other one, but those aren't even the most notable, and you'd be hard pressed to get people to mention them, especially given Henry is such an iconic character from that movie, but the eponymous Henry serial killer there. But Bill Moseley, obviously, in House of a Thousand Corpses as Otis, and I'm sure there's just others. Those were the ones off the top of my dome here. But Otis, what a great name to convey someone who betrays their sort of white trash, toothless, chromosomal deficient, uber villain Otis. It's so fun, and this family is trying to lay low in this white trash Florida town. It looks a little bit like the area around Jacksonville or something. I think it's filmed in Florida. I'm not sure, but you have this family, and they experiment. They have this basement, and they take human subjects against their will, and they experiment on them all under the oversight, little there is, of this nefarious evildoer named Myron. And one of the characters in town gets wind of it and attempts to blackmail the infamous family. And this is a very, very short film. There's not much to it apart from the blackmail plot, and there's a cheating plot between the main character and one of his co-workers is stooping his wife behind his back, and who's like a nympho, a sex maniac. And it's just a very talky, cheeky, but the film's title and look sort of belies its smarts. This is a very smart, funny, silly, stupid movie, and you really have at its heart all these different pieces moving together, and whether the family will be able to withstand the blackmail plot. And Myron is ultimately trying to put on a production of Joan of Arc, you know, the Maiden of Orleans, and trying to procure local damsels to star in this production, obviously, again, against their will, as he's also performing these nefarious experiments in the basement. It's almost like Day of the Dead, in a way. They have these almost zombie-type figures that are chained up and in this dank basement, and he complains that one of them is so brain-dead from all the experiments that all she can say is snow, snow, snow. And it's just this funny little... This is a 75-minute movie. It's dumb. It's silly. It's very chatty. There's some fun effects. This Svengali-esque figure rolling around in a wheelchair who looks like a potato, and just a bunch of trailer trash or hang out in this diner. This is Head of the Family is just a very underappreciated movie, and I think Charles Band is very underappreciated as well for what he did for all of us cult cinema folks. I mean, yes, he's best known for Castle Freak and Puppet Master and all these kinds of movies, but he really, I think Mansion of the Damned, other type of films, Subspecies, that really put him on the map. And he's directed a whole bunch of films, but he had the brilliant idea to take and advance the nascent home viewing experience and really try and promote it. And he was like, and he fascinates me as someone who is a business and marketing reporter, because he had his hands in so many pies or in so many cookie jars, however, whatever the cliche goes. Not only was, I mean, his first and foremost, his love of the cinema was paramount, no pun intended, but he would always want to produce and direct and make movies. So that was where his interest lay. And so when other things that he tried to get involved in, like, he didn't have as much of his soul into it, but he did actually open some of the earliest video stores, I believe in Sherman Oaks, California, somewhere in Los Angeles and Hollywood and stuff. I think he had a little mini empire of VHS and Beta, and it was really like the Blockbuster before Blockbuster. And so what an interesting guy, I mean, to really see how things were turning and how this technology had the potential to really change the world. And he was trying to get in on the ground floor. And what he was trying to do was to transfer and get the rights, secure the rights to films that were super popular maybe a decade prior, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and transfer them, put them on video, and then sell them. I guess make these kind of deals with the original producers and whatnot. And I'm sure he was in discussions with Tobe Hooper. And these were like Billboard charting like properties. And it's amazing to think now when you have like whatever it is, you name it, Arrow or Vinegar Syndrome or any one of these types of Blu-ray player companies that transfer movies and then sell them. Like, physical media is such a so less prominent in the zeitgeist than it was. I mean, not amongst people we know, but really, it's not. If you tell people you buy lots of Blu-rays, a lot of people under, I think, 25 would look at you askance, because streaming and bits and, you know, digital and binaries and ones and zeros and all that, that's the way of the world, and it's almost quaint to be a collector. But I think it does have a lot of appeal, especially when the likes of HBO will just suddenly on a dime just pull something that you're really into, and then where do you watch it? if you want to go about things the legal way. And Band was such an interesting guy, because whether it was his dealings with Vestron, or again his own companies like Wizard Video, and putting out all this schlock like A Spit on Your Grave, like, he's indirectly responsible for a lot of the stuff that we really like to view and really like to champion. So while his own movies maybe aren't that fantastic, he's such an important figure, like he and Lloyd Kaufman, for helping bring these relatively unknown movies and give them a second audience, and a much broader and bigger audience of people who are enjoying things from the comfort of their own home. And the video space is something that's long lamented, and oft lamented by Jeff and I, because it was something we experienced growing up. In my case, growing up in North Toronto, being like frequenting these Korean-owned video stores. They'd basically rent to anybody, and I could just get all this transgressive material as a 14-year-old, 13-year-old. But even just the ritualistic elements of going to a Blockbuster and securing your snacks for the evening, you made it actually a big deal. These days, when it's just a streaming service, I mean, you just put something on and it's almost like background noise. It's not an event when you have at your disposal. I think I have like 6 or 7 streaming avenues that I turn to, whether it's Tubi or Shudder or like just a litany of other ones, and obviously your Primes and Netflix. But I also have like local library stuff, and Canopy with a K, that's another streamer, just tons of these things. And you'd be amazed how difficult it is still to find stuff. So it really takes the sting and takes the event aspect out of it when you just have it all at your fingertips. So I mean, Charles Band, he really did bring the home video side of things to the masses, and that's not something that should be overlooked, because you have to have the ability to have like a futurist foresight to be able to see what's really happening. And it's something that other people who are innovators, and I'm just picking one off the top of my head, Howard Stern really does not have that. He was he succeeded in a medium that was super popular, and then when the medium showed signs of creaking, like the foundation showed signs of being breached, he really didn't have the foresight to be able to do anything differently. And you compare that with like a Joe Rogan, who has his finger on the pulse of things all the time. Like whether he was in a sitcom when sitcoms were big, like news radio. Yeah, he was in reality TV when reality was big, Fear Factor. And then he was one of the early adopters of podcasting, and then now is the largest podcaster in the world. When you compare that to Stern, I mean, Stern basically out of hand dismissed podcasts and said you have to be a broadcaster first. Like there's this infamous spiel he did where he just dismissed it out of hand, said you can't make money off it. There was some chat on the show about PewDiePie, the famous YouTuber, and he just dismissed him out of hand. And this guy probably pulls in, you know, 6 figures a month easily, and is one of the top content creators in the world. And Stern is just so set in his ways that, oh, radio. No one, like, the only time I listen to radio is in the car. That's it. I have no, and maybe if I go out for a run, I'll throw it on. But it's just something I tune into like once a month, if that. So when you have Band, though, like really leaning into one of the first people involved in the home video experiences and transforming films into a different format. It was the miniature tape that preceded Beta and VHS, that it could only, I think, show 60 minutes of content. But then all the different nascent, it was just a wellspring of technological activity in the 80s because of the Walkman and all these developments by Sony, and people turning inward with their entertainment. And the Walkman was an example of that. It's something you could do in your own sort of private way. And Band was just right on board with all these things and seeing what was happening and really embracing it and going after it. And I think he was basically just bought out by some of his partners. They think they threw a couple $100,000 at him and just said, you know, they forced him out through some sort of hostile takeover. And I think he was fine with that because he was just happy to go and direct movies like Head of the Family and just go do different types of movies and go out and do what he really loved doing. And that, I think, afforded him the ability to do so. I mean, Full Moon Features, when you see that logo, it's almost like the Canon logo. It has that. It gives you not quite the chills that the Canon one does, because the movies, frankly, aren't as good. But you get this little giddy sense of excitement when you see. So he opened that after Empire Pictures went belly up, and it's just using it as a forum for disseminating some of his loves, like the horror, the sci-fi, the low budget, all the schlock that Jeff and I really love, and speaking of Paramount, as I made a joke about it before, but like Parasite and Tourist Trap, these were reissues from that entertainment IP that proved to be big as well. And Tourist Trap, such a fun, like underappreciated movie with these telekinetic mannequins. It's just a great, super fun movie. And like, if I'm not mistaken, from what I read up on Band as well, like Flesh Gordon was something that put him into the public's consciousness as well, and Beach Babes from Beyond, all this kind of stuff. The rental market was just exploding, and it was such a fun time to track down things. And also just we've said it probably ad nauseum on the podcast too, but when you pay for something, you're invested in it. And when you're streaming something, you're not. So like, I will bounce, and I'm loath to admit it, but I'll tune into like four or five different movies, and I'll bounce within 2 or 3 minutes if I'm not really engaged. Whereas if I've paid like my $1.99 or $2.99 at a video store, I will suffer through the whole thing just by virtue of the fact that I've paid for the thing. And certainly much of that can be ascribed to being a kid, and you need to, I mean, money is super important at that time, and you can't just throw around 50, 100 bucks like you can willy-nilly as an adult. But yeah, Full Moon Pictures, just a super fun, like I mentioned Subspecies, but I think I've done, I think we've done some of these on the podcast, but I can't recall. But you know, this is the stuff that really makes the rounds on Instagram, as people just like it as you know, the Gingerbread Man, Gary Busey, you know, that Moonbat, and Demonic Toys, and Killjoy. So a killer a clown movie, Evil Bong, obviously, and just ridiculous, low-budget, cornball, super fun movies, of which Head of the Family is one. And the movie is basically just a bunch of vignettes strung together. Another thing I learned is really you can propel a movie forward with just a little bit, a few practical effects, a gimmick, like a disembodied head, and just basically tons of sex scenes to pad the runtime. And you have, I think one of the stars of this is was a Playboy or a Penthouse feature model who just is so, unafraid to just doff her top and her bottom, in many cases too, at a moment's notice, and to just, you know, just be in the buff completely. And a lot of this film is just a lot of like witty banter, nudity, and then some kind of George Romero-esque undead trapped and chained in a basement. It is very, very light, perfect summer viewing. Gotta love Band. Gonna definitely finish up his Confessions of a Puppet Master book. He's such a neat guy. And, you know, these are some of the films that, you know, I wasn't sure about this one when I first started, but I knew that ultimately that I would grow to really enjoy it just because of everyone who is involved. And there's just certain things that you just know what you're getting into, and you know that you're gonna get a decent entertainment experience. I mean, you know, for sure. And even though like the Wizard video stuff, that is more in keeping with Jeff and I's real obsession with horror and all that. But these are more leaning toward the sci-fi and the silliness. But I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, that almost occupies that, the more fun side of the spectrum, and then Wizard occupies the more lurid, sort of transgressive, dark, and more sinister movies like the Emmanuel series and the Driller Killer and that kind of the video nasties, the Boogeyman, and all that kind of thing. But didn't matter. Like, you know, like the guy's responsible for so much as a producer, so much of what entertains us. And, you know, some of the Fulci stuff as well. I believe Zombie was a real key early hit that helped Band line his pockets and be able to make the movies that we know and love. Anyway, No, keep this one short and sweet this week. Looking forward to diving back into genre films of all stripes, particularly horror. Continue to enjoy the show. Pick up a few of our books if you could. If you really enjoy what you're listening to, obviously Death by Umbrella, forward our buddy Lloyd Kaufman. And Mine's Bigger Than Yours, 100 Wackiest Action Movies. So we're nonfiction genre authors on the side. We don't have a Patreon. We don't ask for any support other than please buy our books. That's really helpful to us in the show. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care.